Okay.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It's approximately 1:32 or 3. We're meeting for a work session on case numbers GE-12636 and GE-13-99. We'll go around the room so everybody out there and that's listening can see us at the table here. But typically for a work session, what we do is it's a chance for the commission and staff to talk about what our concerns are, some of our thoughts and ideas. We normally would not ask for anyone else's input on the work session. I know there's a lot of you out there that are very interested in what's going on today, and that's perfect. One of the things that might come out of this is an informal hearing where we might request people to come down and talk to us. We might request a formal hearing when we're all done today. But I just wanted to set the stage. And with that, I don't have any other comments. I turn it over to my colleagues, then we'll go around the room so everybody knows who's at the table here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Randy Christman. I've gone through a lot of this information. A lot of work has been done in the last, I think, not quite 2 weeks since we last met. Been a lot of effort put forth. I think there are still some issues of very serious concern here, but I'll wait till everybody's had a chance to introduce themselves and hopefully dig into this and come up with a resolution that is best for everyone involved.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchak?
I don't have any opening comments.
Okay, if we could go on, Sue, start with you so we identify who's at the table, and then we'll turn it over to the portfolio holder.
My name is Sue Richter with the Licensing Division.
Thank you, Sue.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco with the Commission, Legal.
Josh Gallion, Accounting.
Krista Schmidt, Accounting.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. I'm not necessarily seeking anybody's input out there, but it'd be nice if we could just all who's listening just identify yourself just so we know who's out there in case we would have any questions we might want to direct your way. So if you could just kind of all tell us who's out there listening the best you can without stepping on each other.
Grayson Hoberg with Dakota Prairie.
All right, thank you, Grayson. All right, is anyone else there besides Grayson? I thought I heard more than one voice.
Bob Harrington with the National Bank of Harvey.
All right, thank you, Bob. Okay, well, going once, going twice. All right, with that, we'll go ahead and continue the work session. Commissioner Christman, Randy, it's your portfolio, so I'll let you start out if you'd like.
Well, when we last met, we decided to keep the cease and desist order in place. And I think we kind of just laid the groundwork for some of the things that absolutely had to be done in order for us not to proceed with pursuing an insolvency case here. Among those were conversion of some of the cash sales that were beyond the 45-day limit, either into being paid-up accounts, hopefully, or at the least into credit sale accounts, that equity money be put together in order to make these things possible, and that the complaints that we had already pending be withdrawn. In looking at the information that I've received so far, I see there is progress on converting delinquent cash sale agreements into contracts. A couple of them are paid off. There are still some smaller ones that are still delinquent cash sale contracts, so that is certainly a concern. The biggest of the delinquent cash sale contract was turned into somehow not one but three credit sale contracts, and the complaints have been withdrawn. And I'm looking at Sue to confirm that is correct. Right now we have no complaints.
That's correct.
On
the
file.
The okay. Two pending claims we have had received have both been withdrawn.
Okay. So one of my first questions, I guess there's two things that I find alarming about what has been done, and I'm grateful that some things are done. But besides the things that aren't done, what is done, my two points of concern are, were the cash sale tickets for Rowland Seeds, now they've been converted into three credit sales. Were those three different sellers that are all somehow affiliated with Rowland Seeds, or were those cash sales actually to one person or entity?
I went back and I looked at the records that we'd received of the scale tickets going back quite a ways, and the way that our inspector had identified the obligation on those scale tickets, and they all indicate that Rowland Seeds is the entity that delivered the grain. Mr. Bruin, who is the CEO, I believe, for Rowland Seeds, called me shortly before this meeting, and he had indicated that he signed these three contracts, and I told him that we looked at him and did notice that he split the contracts up, one to Rowland Seeds, one to Roy Bruin, and then one to, I believe it's a Bruin Holding. And I said that on Friday, our attorney, Alana Jeff Kotsako, and I had a conversation with him, and I thought that we had been quite clear in explaining that if there were to be a failure, that we would be looking at the documents to verify how the grain was actually delivered, and based on the information that we had received, and while I can't tell you how a determination would be made on a claim, preliminarily it looks like everything was delivered to Rowland Seeds, and that may be is preliminarily as much of a claim information that we have. And he'd indicated that all three of those parties actually are the owners of the grain, and I just said that if it got to the point of having an insolvency, it would be him and his company's obligation to provide us with the information to support what he was alleging.
Where did this document come from that we had at our last meeting that showed the obligations?
That was prepared by Grayson Hoberg, the farmer debt payment and balance sheet
right.
owed. That was prepared by Grayson, and you all have that. And I handed you, you all have an updated one as of Friday. And I handed you one that I made a little bit of a change on today, and that is I added a payment date column on there so we could easily tell which of the contracts Earth Harvest Mills is actually out of compliance on, and which the payment, that very ending payment date has not, we have not reached that date yet. And I have added these up, and with the most recent conversion by Rowland Seeds, and I'm using the figures that are on this sheet of paper. The credit sale contracts that should have been paid by the end of December 2012 total $336,000, approximately, I'm rounding, and the balance of the credit sale contracts that will be due either later this month or by the end of 2014 total approximately $742,000.
Are those numbers on here? That's just a breakout of the 1 million.
That's just a breakout of the 1,078,204.
And Randy, if I could, I just had one other question.
Sure.
Kind of follow what you're saying is that there was an email that you forwarded us from Grayson that kind of just alarmed me, maybe is a good word, that he said that I've signed DPA from Roy. The DPA is for a dollar amount that is much larger than we owe, but those are the numbers that he had to be on it to get him to sign. I don't understand what that means, where he's saying it's larger than he owes, but he had to put it for him to sign that. Is there some disagreement in who owes what?
I believe that there's a discrepancy between what Earth Harvest Mills shows that they are owing to Rowland Seeds and what Rowland Seeds is owed.
They say they owe. They're owed.
What they say they're owed, yes. On Friday when...
Are we talking $20 here? Are we talking...
Oh, no. We're talking more than that.
But Grayson has mentioned...
Could I speak real quick?
This is a close. It's a work session. Well, thanks, Grayson, but we'll discuss.
Fine.
Over the months we've met with him, he has mentioned a difference and that was one of the reasons why he wasn't getting things wrapped up, because they had to have this worked out about what the dollar figure was. I mean, I'm just going back to in my memory that they both agree that there's a discrepancy.
How would that be resolved in the course of this?
Well, if we were in an insolvency again, people have to produce their documentation, and we make a call based on what comes in. It goes to court. If the other side thinks we didn't make the right call, they can litigate it in court. We had a couple of those in Grabansky that we litigated.
Sure. Well,
and the other thing is staff also tries to recreate the grain records so that it helps us make a determination regarding the claims. So at the time, assuming we got to a point of insolvency, Tim and or Mike would be out there and they would be looking at all of the documents to try and come up with which is the more correct figure, whether it's the information Grayson is giving us or Rowland Seeds is giving us or somewhere in between.
Well, and I'll just go the rest of the way, open the door here for my colleagues, that over the last week, one of the things that I became very concerned about was the official record that the commission has developed in this case over the last 4 years. Do we have an official record, or is it all a hodgepodge of emails and informal or work sessions? I mean, do we have an official record that could hold up under a review of some type of judicial body?
We don't have it. We don't have any record evidence because we have not had any sworn testimony. We have the records of the commission. I mean, when an inspector does an exam and produces records and writes a memorandum of adjustment, that's the record of the commission, but it's not sworn evidence. We don't have that.
The way I understand the time frames is when we did the last cease and desist, they had 15 days to request a formal hearing, and they've not requested any type of formal hearing. But could I request a formal hearing?
Certainly, you can always request a hearing on that.
And that's
so
where.
What was the 15-day deadline? I didn't mean to know.
I think it was 15 days from the cease and
desist. March 14th.
Okay.
But I don't. I'm open, of course, to finish whatever discussion we need to with my colleagues. But I guess I'm concerned now with whatever we do, that we've got the right record in place to support it. And so that's something that I guess I'd be leaning towards recommending, is to request some type of formal hearing and get all these parties in here and tell us what they've told us before, but do it under oath. And then whatever we decide, there would be a record developed on that. And so maybe that's going farther than you guys wanted to go right now. If you feel comfortable with other things, I'm certainly open to it. But that's in the back of my mind right now. So I'll throw that out.
Could I just respond on the record, because I want the context to be correct. The cease and desist was supported. The asking the commission and the granting of the cease and desist was supported by an affidavit of staff. And the reason that elevator has 15 days to ask for a hearing is to dispute anything in that affidavit. So the issuing of the cease and desist without a request for a hearing by the elevator is based on something that is considered fact and is solid. Now, any record of, like, is it time to lift the cease and desist, for example, might be wiser after record testimony. That's just the thought process. The fact that you issued it, I think, would survive any kind of challenge because there was no hearing requested. All the other possible steps that you may or may not take, you're probably advisable to have record testimony for.
How much of our action is being directed by the memorandum of agreement? And whether they fail to meet the terms of that? Because I think my understanding was when we did the cease and desist, I was placing a lot of faith in the fact that he hadn't complied with the failure to convert scale tickets in a timely manner. That was,
yes,
had been.
And that's
unaddressed.
I think that's an underlying fact. I don't even think Grayson would dispute it. And it's underlying the memorandum of agreement and the cease and desist. But the cease and desist, in my mind, as far as recommending to the commission, would be legitimate and necessary whether we had a memorandum of agreement or not, because of the length of time of the noncompliance with the conversion. I don't think that I was relying on the memorandum of agreement, but it was an additional thing that was in violation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and actually, this cease and desist happened before his last day that he had a chance to come into compliance with the right. memorandum of agreement.
Well, the second half of it. I mean, part of it was
yes.
due.
Yes.
So what you're saying, if I understand you correctly, Alana, is if we were to consider releasing the cease and desist or whatever you call it, we should have some sort of formal proceeding to analyze the facts of the case that
well,
would justify that.
I think if everything got paid up and there was compliance and there was the commission had some interest in caution, you know, a precaution like we did in previous cases of the cash sales being pretty immediate turnaround, I don't know that you need it because the evidence would be the paid account. But if you are thinking about making some of these decisions based on the financial statements and is the equity coming and those kinds of things, then maybe you do need somebody under oath. All these questions that we're struggling with, how can we find this out? How can we be sure of that? That's how you find those things out, is on the witness stand or not. You know, so that's, I guess, a kind of a simple analysis of it.
Well, let me ask you this, and this is going back to these contracts. Does it matter now how much the value, as far as the indemnity fund, the total amounts, I understand it matters who they're made out to and who the tickets say they were supposed to be to. Mm-hmm. But by signing these contracts, is the dispute over with as far as how much is owed, or has Grayson now acknowledged owing $300,000 more than what was on this sheet before?
I don't know, but in an insolvency, staff is going to come up with a number that staff thinks is right, because the two parties in other situations could collude, so to speak, as to what's owed. So staff is not too... jump in here anytime soon. Too worried about that because staff has to find the evidence, at least that's been our practice in the past, from the claimant, from the elevator, and from going through the elevator records. I mean, they look at bank statements and everything. And some of these other insolvencies, there's been checks between parties, and we had to litigate what was the check for. Was it payment, or was it loan repayment, or was it something else? So staff gets into it in a big way at that point, to come up with a number. So now Grayson may have other legal interest in what he did that I couldn't give an opinion on, but that's outside what staff would look at. It would just be one thing that we'd look at out of many things that if we could find that documentation.
Well, it seems to me for our purposes, we can add about $300,000 more to this sheet that was sent out because he signed contracts over the weekend acknowledging that much more to Rowland Seeds or some affiliates of Rowland Seeds than what he said when he turned this in.
I think we wouldn't know that amount until we go through the records and try and establish what the logic was behind that third contract or the amount of the second, well, that, you know, for that matter. I had a conversation with Grayson this morning, and good, better, and different, I did say that I would share with you, and he told me that he does have a financing plan, if you will, is with the bank right now, and he said that when he visited with Roy Bruin over the weekend, that Roy had told him he was planning to travel to North Dakota to talk about an equity into his business as well. Excuse me, Roy did confirm that when he talked to me on the phone, and Grayson said whether he has one or two potential sources of investment that if he is not allowed to purchase grain next week, both of those two will fall through, is what his belief is. He asked that I share that with you, so I am bringing that to your attention. Thank you. He has a contract that is due. I think he mentioned that at the closed work session with us for a company that he was processing flour, and in order for him to meet his commitments of that contract, he's got to get flour to them. I did ask him if he looked at something alternative, such as a source of, can you buy flour rather than buying wheat to process into flour, and he said that wasn't an option.
Well, now I'm somewhat interested in your idea of a work session with people under oath and such. Well, and in my time here, I guess we haven't done that, so I hadn't thought of that as an option. So I'll just tell you what I was thinking of before. But now I'm weighing whether I like yours better.
Well, and I think about a work session, we don't have to decide anything today. We could do a work session tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And we could, over the weekend, I reviewed what we had, and then today I looked at some more, and I thought, you know, whatever we do, there's been too many of this is going to happen, and this is going to happen, and this is going to happen. I've been hearing this for a long time. And get someone, you know, they can waive their 20 days, and we could do a formal hearing Friday. And we could, I mean, so it's not like this could take a long time, but it would be a chance to get the stuff together. So that's kind of where, you know, if we want to just table this till tomorrow at this time or till Wednesday, we don't have to decide that, but I just kind of put that, it's kind of where I guess there's no way I would lift the cease and desist order unless there was something sworn testimony telling me why I should do that. It's kind of where I'm at right now.
Well, let me throw this out, but now it's short of a motion because I may like your idea better than this one. So. But my thought was, and first of all, to explain it, I can see where it would be very difficult to get someone to invest in the business if they thought there was a chance that the investment is just going to go to pay old bills and then it's going to be shut down anyway. So unless they know that things are going to be lifted and once this investment comes in, that things are going to be operational again, no one's going to invest. So my thought was that we could, at a subsequent meeting when everything is prepared and written out in front of us, direct the staff to lift the cease and desist order based upon, I have four contingencies here. One being proof of the receipt of the equity money when it's lifted, the two kind of coincide. Number two, that however much of that money is necessary be used to pay off past due contracts and cash sale agreements that are beyond the due date.
100%. All of it until they're paid off, or some agreed upon percentage?
Whatever is late. If those cash sales were supposed to be 100% within 45 days, and most of them are more than 45 days.
So make them current.
Yep. The third one, that being going on into the future, in order to make sure we don't end up with $1 million in cash sales and a $50,000 bond again, whether they would choose to increase their bond or not would be up to them, but that the cash obligations may not exceed 200% of the bond amount. And the understanding that if there's any future claims, we're just not messing around, we go right into proceedings for an insolvency. And if there's complaints, we proceed with revoking the license.
Well, I'm certainly not against any of that. Julie, what do you think? Okay. It's a lot of moving parts for sure.
The third piece, the cash obligations not exceed 200% of the bond. I mean, just in terms of the details of this, I was thinking any future release of the cease and desist would be tied to an understanding that any grain purchase would be paid for. There wouldn't be any credit sales at all for a time being. But
it may be impractical.
I mean, I don't know if that's practical or if you could have a time limit, but
you know, sometimes
he's paying cash now, he said. He's paying cash for his grain now. Or would. That's what he agreed to do in our last meeting, if I remember correctly.
Well, recall that a true credit sale, if done according to statute, is not affected. The bond does not affect that, and that doesn't affect the bond. So mm-hmm. So what I was hearing was, if somebody wants to sell you on a deferred payment contract, then that's one thing. And hopefully they know what the conditions are of that, and you put the correct date on that. But that the other sales that would come under the bond would not be allowed to get more than 200% of the bond. I wasn't quite sure how we would play that out. And we can talk about that. But the credit, when you say credit, in Grayson's case, we're talking cash that should have been converted within the 30 days that turned into unpaid cash versus true credit sales, which come under the indemnity fund and not mm-hmm. the bond.
So what you're saying is you wouldn't have a sale bigger than 200%, a cash sale larger than 200% of what the bond.
Well, cumulative cash sales. They have 45 days to pay those.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think within the industry, you know, people don't typically, I mean, they might deliver when the person there that signs the checks isn't there and they're not going to want to wait around. They might have a bin they're trying to clean out and it's going to be 3 or 4 loads and mm-hmm. now the cows are calving and so, you know, they're waiting until the rest of it comes in and they say they're coming tomorrow but they don't come for 4 or 5 days. Mm-hmm. So there's some reason why it doesn't maybe just happen that day, mm-hmm. but we certainly can inspect there anytime we want and the clear commitment on their part that it can't ring up load after load, month after month without any payments going out. And so that bond at least covers a substantial part of whatever would be out there.
Mm-hmm. Would you want to raise the bond level?
Well, if he needs to take in more grain than that, then he would need to.
Okay.
If he can, you know, assuming that this equity money would be used to pay down these that are already delinquent to close to zero, then he's got $100,000 to work with. I don't know what organic wheat sells for, but I'm assuming that that would give him, you know, 8-9 semi-loads that he could take in without exceeding $100,000, which would be double his $50,000 bond. That's quite a bit of wheat to work with for a miller, and if that's not enough, then you should increase the bond.
So the risk right now, he's got $86,000 in cash sales sitting out there, right?
Right.
Yes.
And how much credit contracts were due on March 13th? What was that amount, Sue?
The amount that's due on March 13th, there's
credit sale payments, I should say.
$17,261.25. I had not added them up for that date. Just those two contracts are due. There's about $43,000 that are due on March 31st.
And a whole bunch that were due.
And a bunch that were
December
due.
December 31st.
Right.
Balances.
And then there's two that are due on May 1, Farmers Direct.
And that's a good sized chunk.
110, I think, if you add those up, somewhere around there, 110, 113. So if you break them down. And the rest, except for the Rowlands one, were all due on December 31st.
Randy, tell me your thoughts on how eliminating the cease and desist is going to help him get out of this mess.
He can buy grain and
make money on it.
Potentially make money.
And we would be protecting the consumer, future customers with a number 3 cash obligations not exceed 200% of the bond.
We'd be providing some level of protection, mm-hmm. at least up to half. And we would also be getting, as I look at these things that are either due at the end of 2012 or by May 1st of this year, I didn't add, it looks to me like about $500,000.
Those are about 336, 300.
Mm-hmm. If those all get paid up, that is extraordinarily good progress in improving this situation. Mm-hmm. We would then, by offering that level of trust to lift it and keep things going, have cleared up far more than what we're allowing to get delinquent again. And so I think we will have accomplished something pretty big there if that could happen. I think one of the obstacles that's hanging out there is, the big giant obstacle is actually getting that equity money, and someone is going to, we're not talking about someone just giving money. They're going to want equity, and that's going to mean the rest of the stockholders in this enterprise are going to, I presume at least half of them or whatever the bylaws call for, have to agree to that. This would have, these contingencies, while only numbering four, will require a lot of work and action.
Okay. Sue or Alana or Randy or Julie, the customers that we're looking at that aren't highlighted, like at the top here, David Hager, $4,029, and Wendell Lund, the bottom, $12,000. Walk me through again how they're going to get their money.
Well, hypothetically, if we had a failure today, we would be looking at the $50,000
right.
bond.
But if he does what he's supposed to do, how is the priority going to be to pay these individuals? Or, I mean, how soon can that, like, let's say the very top, David Hager, how soon do you think, or does Grayson think he can have David Hager paid down to zero?
I have no idea.
I don't think we know. I would assume that if the money comes, my understanding from visiting with Grayson, or when it comes, I should say, would be to take care of everybody. I would hope that the balance on the credit sales on these deferreds and the cash would be paid equally, simultaneously.
Yeah.
I mean, like, let's say hypothetically, if you got $200,000, hopefully you wouldn't pick one and two. You would share $200,000 and, you know, kind of, I mean, that's what I think going back.
Well, I just was looking at, like, just as you got David Hager was owed $4,029 in September of last year, and mm-hmm. he's still owed the same.
Mm-hmm.
Where Wendell Lund on the bottom was owed $16,000, he owes $12,000. So does that mean that Wendell's been more aggressive with Grayson than David? Or, I mean, is there a rhyme or reason?
Possibly.
Probably. Well, some of them were the four that filed claims. I don't know which were the four. But four of them filed claims here.
And what do those people think?
Zero.
Like, what do they think right now of this? I mean,
I have no idea.
And that's part of the getting them to a hearing and saying their piece. If Wendell Lund says, you know, he's well aware of it, he'd prefer that we just do A, B, C, D, E, that means something to me. If he says, I want my money now, I just, maybe there's a way we can do what Randy's saying, but still do some other I don't know,
well,
fact finding.
Connecting the two dots of, like, what I, like, I do, you know, I have no qualms about what you, the action you took with the cease and desist, but when one of your contingencies was proof of the equity, and we were talking about, well, if you were going to lift it, you might want evidence. Now, there's a place where you might want something, some record sworn testimony, as opposed to us all kind of wondering and talking to, and seeing if we can talk to the other investors and those kinds of things. Maybe Grayson has to produce record evidence of that information that is sworn.
Well, my thought, and maybe there's a better way of doing this, but that investor X, let's call them, comes in and is going to plop $500,000-$600,000 into this. I guess my thought is that what we're looking for is that of that $500,000 or $600,000, $4,029 is a check to David Hager and on down the line.
Right.
And if that accounts for $400,000, you know, find maybe the last $200,000 or whatever it is goes to the enterprise for whatever improvements they need on their bagging machines or whatever, and that lender X now has a certain amount of stock in the enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I would think that this equity money we would require to be in the form of certified checks to these people who are owed money, because these farmers, and this is a question, but haven't they long past their options in choosing whether this is paid or not? I thought they're supposed to either take payment within 45 days or go
convert.
Sign a contract.
Right. That's right.
So we can require them to be paid.
Oh,
for
yeah,
their own protection
exactly.
and for to follow the law.
And as we said, you know, either with you or with Commissioner Kalk, the best proof that the equity has come in is the fact that the cashier's checks have gone out to everyone. I mean, then you don't need anything more if this line is zero.
So what can you tell us about the second, well, I guess it's the third paragraph in his letter today? We have two new cash options that, subject to the necessary approvals, will have the farmers completely paid off in 30 to 60 days. Both parties gave our banks and investors a deadline of Friday. Well, it must be Monday, April 1st, to approve. That doesn't make sense to me. Parties gave our banks and investors a deadline to
approve? I think Grayson could answer this much better than I could if, I don't know if the commission wants to give him the opportunity. I mean, I can tell you what I understood and what I'm
not opposed to hearing from Grayson. If
this is not like thunder hearing, it's out of control.
Grayson, can you explain that?
Sure. Is the on that email I sent?
Correct.
Let me get to it in a second here.
Can you get a little closer to your phone? Grayson?
Yes, can you hear me?
Barely. We're working on it.
Scott's working on it here.
I turned it down.
Oh. Okay.
So we had one. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
We had one entity send a letter to the bankers and with a, you know, their thoughts on coming in with money to the company. The bankers received that letter today. They have to respond to it by Friday. And I've got another, and Sue said who it is, it's Roy Bruin, Rolling Seeds. He and a partner of his are going to submit a plan to the banks also by Thursday. And I'm waiting to confirm, you know, I don't know exactly what that one looks like yet. But because there's one plan out there on the table already that has to be decided on by Friday, I have told Roy he's got to have a plan out there by to the banks by Thursday also, that and to our investors, that everyone can see and vote yay or nay on that one also. I would expect to hear from the banks and our investors saying by Friday that they're going to go forward with this or they're not going to go forward with it. And what both parties have told me is they would put their money in, and this, we're talking many millions of dollars, not, you know, it's under $10 million, but it's above $5 million. They'd put their money into the company, and upon closing, upon getting all the documents they need and some due diligence yet, and I'm guessing that's going to be 30 to 60 days. What they've also said, and both parties have said this, is if there's a legal way they can put money in prior to closing so that we can get these farmers mostly paid or partially paid, and, you know, they would do something earlier if the lawyers can figure out how to do that.
Okay.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah.
The email says Friday, April 1, but you're talking about this Friday, which is...
Isn't this Friday, April 1st, or is it... I'm sorry. Did I put the wrong date down?
Monday is April 1st.
It's what, the 29th?
Sorry. It's this Friday.
29th of March. Okay.
I'm sorry. I was looking at my calendar wrong. You're right. It's the 29th.
And I have a question. If, let's say, once that commitment is made and the contracts or papers or whatever signed and before the money's turned over, is there any way that the company could back out at that point?
The company can back out during the due diligence. So between, let's say, the banks and shareholders say we're going to go forward with deal X, there is a period of time where there's due diligence going and there's getting documents from the banks, there's getting documents from me, and both have gone through a significant amount of documents from me. But there is that period of time during that where they have the ability to say, I'm not going to do it. One of the things that both of us said is that between, you know, if the banks and everyone approve this on Friday, then we've got to be producing flower from Manildra. And if we're losing, Manildra's still there, but if we can't get flower to them, then they would potentially walk away also. And that's, one of them has told me that. So.
Can you share what banks you're talking about?
Well, it's that National Bank of Harvey is the lead bank. Bob Harrington's on the phone. He's the lead bank for this process, and there are banks that also funded it. And I don't know if Bob wants those banks disclosed or not. I know who they are, but he's the lead bank. All the things go through Bob, through the National Bank of Harvey, and Harvey and who it's farmed out to, that's disclosure on Bob's side.
Do you have existing loans with National Bank of Harvey?
Correct. We've had them since 2004.
Okay, you can go a lot of different ways here. Oftentimes, I shouldn't say oftentimes, sometimes, when you get to a point in a work session like this, where the portfolio holder has the motion which he or she wants to bring forward. So if you know, there's a lot of ways we could do. One is we could say, you know what, we'll do this again tomorrow, we'll have another work session then. Or Randy, if you want to go with the motion that kind of the way you laid it out, you could prepare a motion that says, I will, you know, lift the cease and desist, A, B, C, D, E, and then Julie and I would have to decide what we're going to do with it, if we'd want to amend it, if we'd want to just vote against it, or if Julie has an old motion that she wants to prepare, she can, I mean, we can, that's kind of where this is where, unless there's something clear that breaks out for the three of us, which is why sometimes we'll go to another work session, or you get to a certain point where you can just have multiple work sessions and not make any progress, and you just get to a point where you got to go with something. So... I just throw that out there. It's kind of hung at this point, I think.
I have a question for Commissioner Chrisman. The contingencies were, your thoughts were not to lift it until the contingencies were met, which, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So the getting of the equity to pay everybody and paying the delinquencies would have to be met before the cease and desist in taking grain would be effective, correct?
Say it one more time again.
Well, you had one item paying the proof of the equity, but you also had the first one, which was paying the past due. So that, to me, that is, you know, that's not going to get done without the equity investment. So the column would have to be zero before... Under this plan, the cease and desist would be lifted, okay. Which means it wouldn't be lifted in time for what Grayson's asking for, in time to take this grain and this flour.
Probably the answer to that is probably most up to
to Grayson, but I meant
the banker at Harvey. Whenever they're comfortable putting that money forward.
Okay, I just want to be sure I was hearing the correct. Sequence.
Situation where somebody's going to have to like they're going to probably have to budge, right? Because it's chicken and egg. They're, his investors are saying they aren't going to invest until the cease and desist is lifted, and we're saying we're not lifting it until you prove that you've got the investment. Is there any proof of investment that they can provide?
Well, my thought was, I think this commission has a pretty good record of following through on things when we go on record. And if I think that the lenders are going to be satisfied if there's a motion here that passes that says when these scenarios all play out and are completed, the cease and desist order is gone. I think that gives them what they need to move forward. I'm very doubtful that the lenders would be skeptical of us backing out. Mm-hmm. And so, like I say, what I think we would need is for those lenders to send money that they can prove to us that covers all these things, well, all the things that I mentioned. When we discussed this not quite 2 weeks ago, my understanding was that we were going to kind of have this work session and hopefully, you know, be close to some resolution that we could bring to our Wednesday regular mm-hmm. meeting. And so does it seem reasonable? I guess I'm getting more comfortable with my own suggestion all the time here as we continue to talk about it, to kind of move in that order, have staff prepare everything so we would have it in written form and could really look it over. And in the meantime, if the lead lender that is listening right now wants to talk to Sue, and if there's things that should be addressed in this that we're missing in order to make this more workable or workable more quickly or whatever the case may be, we can potentially work that into the program by Wednesday.
Well, we could even, depending how long it takes to get a motion together, we could have a special meeting today. I mean, we don't have to wait till Wednesday, in my opinion, for something of this importance that for all parties. I mean, we could, I don't know how long it would take to draft that, but if you want to proceed with that, I think the sooner the motion would be available for Julie and I to vote on it would be better for all parties. You know, if we could do this, make a decision by today or tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon, it's only one day, but it might make a difference for them.
I'm thinking someone else might have a lot to digest here and may have a response
sure.
to us that we want to weigh in.
Well, and number two could take some crafting because, I mean, money be used to pay current balance due on cash and credit sale contracts. I mean, he's got he's almost $1 million
yep.
owed to Rollins Seeds.
Except Rollins Seeds' contract is now out to 2014. Mm-hmm. So it's not a delinquent account today, thank the Lord.
Isn't there any payments due on that?
That part I don't know, but.
24 March, 23rd. Oh, no, I'm sorry. End of this year.
Yeah, we don't know what's due on the month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking.
So I think number two might require some defining so
well,
that we're on the same
the legal,
know what we're asking for.
The document also is going to take a few brain cells. What I'm seeing two possible ways of accomplishing it. One is a motion that commits the commission, and when the conditions are met, then there's an order lifting the cease and desist, or an order lifting the cease and desist, but it's conditioned upon these things happening. It's conditions precedent to the order being effective. It's not effective until the conditions are met. That's doable. Takes a little more time than the average staff whip it out over noon hour order. We do. But it's doable. And again, the language would have to be carefully worded.
For the language, you could set a past due date. You know, accounts past due as of a certain date. If you look at this, as of March 31st, it's right around $380,000. That's past due as of the end of this month, March 31st, 2013. Mm-hmm. So you could just set that as a parameter.
Right.
Well, that's where I think I'm hearing Randy and Julie say, hey, Wednesday sounds fine for us to act on it. Is that what I heard? I mean,
I don't know that I liked Alana's proposal first, the first one that you outlined. I think it's more in line with what Randy was talking about, saying a motion that would say we will remove the cease and desist when these are in order. That lets them know that these are the conditions you need to start working on. You let us know when you have these, and then the cease and desist is will be eliminated, removed, or what do you call it? Taken away.
Lifted.
And we could do that you could potentially do it today. We could do it tomorrow if we wanted to get the wording just right onto exactly what the conditions are and just do a little work session tomorrow.
I think Wednesday's the better day.
Or Wednesday.
Yeah, it's yours to put forward unless we want to put an alternate mm-hmm. motion together. So I just was open to that.
I do think as far as which past due things we want to address, it needs to be whatever's past due when everything else comes together. If this drags on until May,
then these
Farmers Direct ones are due too. If this is done on Friday and a couple more of these are converted into contracts in the meantime, then even though that as of today they're due, mm-hmm. maybe by Friday they're not due anymore. So I think it's whenever they feel they've met all these obligations and prove it to our staff, staff's ready to lift it. We've got the order from the commission, assuming this all passes.
Go ahead, Julie. You got a thought.
I'm kind of interested in hearing if the bank that's listening out there has anything to offer in this conversation and has anything to say.
Do we want to put them on the spot now or let them digest this?
Well, they can say no. They don't have anything to offer if they don't. Yes. But if
they can call Sue, right, or Alana?
Right.
They can.
Fine.
They can ask a question, too.
If the bank has any questions, concerns, thoughts, please feel free to speak up. I'd be interested in knowing if you're dying to say something out there.
I'm always dying to say something, but I don't know that I can add much to the process. The volume's been pretty hard to catch everything that everybody's been saying, but I have been trying to follow along as quick as I could. If there were some specific questions, I could certainly answer those.
I don't have any specific questions for you. Alana does.
I have one. Just tell me if I'm out of place. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
If you guys have been lending to him all along, you know what his operation looks like. So, but yet he's been in this situation. So is this likely to happen, or is this another waste of staff's effort here in trying to put something together for the commission?
I think the investor standpoint is very critical to the success of Earth Harvest Mills. That what Grayson's done and some of the promising concepts, I'm not real familiar with what Rollin Seeds is going to offer for the business or for an investment. But if what you put together allows them time to get some equity into the business and keep it a going concern, I sure think people are going to get paid more than they are if it's not a going concern. Did that answer the question?
Kind of.
All right. Alana, well,
thank you.
Alana, for my question for me, I guess, how do you get such that their responses coming forward can be admissible in an insolvency? Is an email admissible down the road in something that you look at, or is it what would a judge base their insolvency decisions on?
Well, nothing like that would ever be considered record evidence. It would be considered records of this office. Sue Richter testifying that yes, I got 10 emails and here they are, but what the emails say would be hearsay. Okay?
Right.
So that's a little different than something like the spreadsheet with the payments, where you're going to have elevator records backing up these payments, the checking account or whatever, you know, that the check bounced or that it didn't bounce, or if there was a notation on it, what it was for, those kinds of things. So I don't know that there is much today in our office that is an evidentiary record for a future insolvency. The insolvency evidentiary record would have to be built from our information and from other records.
But if what we're trying to do is make sure we protect the consumers, which I think that's what we're here for, a lot of things, but the facts that we would point to down the road of why we lifted the cease and desist, what the suggestion of Randy is, he's laying out those four points, that would clearly be something that would be looked at, right? Because that would be commission, voting record kind of stuff.
Yes, and it would be based on the zero column over here on the right. Pay, you know, nothing further owed. You know,
is there something else that we should have when Grayson sends us things or the company, should we have sworn affidavits? Is that better than emails, or is that just waking more busy work?
If you're disputing, a sworn affidavit is just an initial, a little bit bigger promise that you're telling the truth, or a statement that you're telling the truth. But if it was disputed, you have to have the person on the witness stand.
Sure.
If the facts are disputed. So I don't know that anything would be helpful but a true hearing. But it depends what it is you're looking to prove. And again, if the checks go out and they don't bounce and the debt is zero, then that's as good a proof as you could get.
Okay. Thank you.
And we do have proof that the claims were
we have that in writing, I believe. Yeah.
So we have that proof. We have the contracts that were signed.
Right.
So that's proof that progress is being made.
Do those contracts, since they're copies, does that matter in a court of law? Or do they have to be a certified copy or anything like that? I'm getting way overboard here. I understand that.
No, that's fine. It's good to share what happens in an insolvency with commissioners. That original contract is going to exist somewhere. It's supposed to be sent to, I guess they send two out, and one, they keep one, and they send one to the elevator. So in an insolvency, Tim's going to be out there collecting all the original, the one of the two originals at the elevator.
I can remember back years ago when I was doing more legal stuff at the ground level, we would never take a copy of something.
Right.
Somebody had to notarize that was that they saw the original. I mean, they just did.
Right.
And not just in insolvencies. We take a lot of things, emails, as if they're original. We've got no real proof of that.
That's correct. But in certain areas like the bond, Sue's real careful about how getting the original bonds. We would be using those original contracts from the elevator in an insolvency as proof with an original signature on it. We had one instance in Grabansky where we couldn't find a contract, but the the farmer testified and the judge believed him. So, and I don't think he ever produced anything.
It does come back
anything.
To what the judge wants to do ultimately.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's, but they were on the witness stand saying I had this contract, but I misplaced it. But, yes, you need originals.
I have one question for the commission, and that is if we don't have any pending claims right now, so we don't have what we traditionally would have to do our insolvency documents, and if we do a motion that says we will list the cease and desist once these things have happened, if the timing of the lifting of the cease and desist isn't such so that it fits in with his business plan, do we just wait until the time that somebody else files a claim with us so that we can prepare our insolvency documents?
Say that again, you lost me.
Okay.
I think she's asking, are we supposed to prepare insolvency documents now or wait for the next claim if one comes?
Well, I don't think you start preparing insolvencies yet.
Right.
Well, the reason, and I'm asking something a little bit different
That,
actually. Okay. It's if we're going to do a motion that says once you do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we will lift the cease and desist. Grayson is saying, I need to be able to buy grain next week or I'm going to be out of violation with this contract and my business is going to fail. So if we're not going to lift the cease and desist so he can buy the grain that he needs to purchase so that he can process it into flour and fill that contract. Do we just kind of let business kind of sit there and not move forward or backward until we get another claim here, at which point we would then file insolvency documents?
Sue, what else could we be? It is odd, but it's his business, not ours. What are you thinking that staff or the commission would be doing?
I think the what-if game is always hard to answer. I mean, I think we got a path that we're forging forward for the next couple of weeks. If 2 weeks from now, I would suspect that you give us an update every commission meeting as to the status of these claims. I mean, if he's done, he's done. But if 2 weeks later he hasn't met the conditions, then that's his. But at some point in time, then we could then address it. But it's always hard, I think, to...
Okay.
I thought you were going down the road of, what if we do this and then tomorrow someone else files a claim against him? Then,
this is going to be very carefully worded. Yeah. It's not going to promise anything if circumstances change, which is one reason we need a few minutes to try to word it right.
And I think Senator, sorry about that.
I think of him that way too often.
I think Commissioner Chrisman has already said it in his number four, and that is if we get another claim for insolvency, we're not going to make a call. We're just going to draft the documents.
Update the drafted documents.
Yes. Yeah, they are drafted.
They're ready to roll. Change the name.
Well, and if we proceed with the motion that Randy has in mind, I think we're showing him and his investors that we want to do everything we can to make him successful. But based on, you know, the balance sheets we're looking at and the record to date, we have to have some protections in place, period. I mean, it would be great if we could lift it today, but there isn't enough to protect potential future customers at this point to justify doing that. Okay. So we have to have some of these protections in place before that can be done. I feel strongly about that.
Okay. And just, I just lost my train of thought. That's how bad that is, huh? Going forward, I guess, we'll just have to see how this all plays itself out. But the timing, that's what it was. So you're still, everybody's comfortable with Wednesday timing?
I am. Does that give you enough time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And I'll just, for my colleagues, I'm still not convinced that I will vote for this. I'll just tell you that now. But I certainly want to see what it looks like. So, but if we didn't, I would certainly give you, I would tell you long before tomorrow. Once we get a look at it, I just want to see what it says. Because I think it makes sense. I'm just, as long as there's enough protections built in there that if we get something else, this deal's off.
Well, and I'm going to put a caveat in that if we start to write it and we realize that it's impossible to write it the way we think we might be able to and not bind the commission in a way that's inappropriate, we'll be back asking for a quick meeting.
That sounds reasonable.
Okay. We'll try here.
Anything else? Nope. Portfolio holder, anything else?
Well, I think we made progress in the last 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
We've gotten some things moved toward resolution. We just have a little ways to go, and I look at some of these numbers, and it worries me. But yet at the same time, as long as we're making progress, there's still hope, and a lot of successful businesses have experienced troubles, too, and gotten through them. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a remarkable accomplishment if everybody together can make that happen in this case. And so if we can play a role in that... I'd be awful glad.
All right, perfect. Anything else for the good of the team? All right, with that, we'll close the work session on case numbers GE12-636 and GE13-99. Thank you all.
Someone has left the conference.
Grayson Hoberg.